Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Now, to talk Nashville Predators, Len Gleno.
Glad you're with us. Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. John Glennon, Glenn Gleno of The Athletic, is in studio with us. Game 2 tomorrow night at the Stone. Predators and Stars. Glennon, what's up, man? Good to see you.
Too much. Good. Good to be here. Thanks
Thank you for
me.
Being in studio. So the Preds are on the ice today at what, 11:30?
11:30, trying to get it straight, trying to get back in gear here.
They will provide all the answers at this availability?
As usual, as is often the case during hockey, especially playoffs, everything will become crystal clear. All lineup changes, all injuries will all be set in stone.
Let me throw out something looking into the future a bit for how crazy Nashville's about to be. So we're 2 weeks away from the draft. We're going to have Jimmy Buffett in town on that Saturday night. Game 7 potentially of this series would be Wednesday night.
I believe that is right, yes.
Wednesday night, Game 7 here, which means potentially, and this show does not believe in jinxes. This is why I bring this up. Potentially, Game 1 of Round 2 would be Friday night, the same night of the NFL draft. It would be Friday, because they're not going to hold it to Saturday because Jimmy Buffett's in town, and you're not going to wait until Sunday to start that series.
And you got the marathon that weekend.
And the marathon as well. So if they win the series, they're guaranteed, we're guaranteed chaos. To see some chaos downtown.
Absolutely.
With an additive.
So
it's already going to be chaotic.
Right, right. This could take us back to the days of 2 years ago when the Preds reached the Stanley Cup Finals, and we had the CMAs and... you know, all kinds of, 50,000 people crowds, 70,000 people crowds downtown. And I know from the media perspective, it took me about 20 minutes just to walk to the, to the arena after parking. So could be chaotic. But, they knew all this going in sure. terms of getting the NFL draft and so forth. So
chaotic, but fun.
Yes.
Once in a lifetime experience for a sports fan in the city.
And they have given us more room by clearing out a few cherry trees as well.
Oh, so that's true.
Yes.
There is that.
That's right.
Keep that
there
in mind.
Is a jersey. Somebody sent me a picture of the jersey, Titans number 10 jersey with the name Cherry Trees across the back that I found humorous.
Already cut, if you will.
Yeah.
So to get to
practice squad at best.
To get to that, well, Adam Humphries will have something to say about number 10 now.
Very true.
To get to the game one scenario we're talking about, they got to get through the Dallas Stars. And I was talking with Reed earlier. Wednesday night was Dallas Stars hockey. The Predators came out and played the way they have to play in that first period against Dallas and really against anyone. But that's the style you have to attack Dallas with. They should have been up more than a goal. And then once Dallas tied it 1-1 in the second, it was deflating for Nashville, not the opposite. It didn't energize anything. And that's concerning to me that they can play as well as they did in the first period and then be as flat as they were for roughly 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was interesting because, what we saw probably too often this during the regular season for the Predators was slow starts, sluggish starts. That was an issue. When they did score the first goal, when they did lead at the end of the first period, the Preds were generally outstanding, one of the best teams in the league. And it was as if after this first period, somebody came up and tapped them on the shoulder and said, hey, you guys had a great first period.
Well done.
When you guys score first, you're great. When you lead after the first period, you're great. We're good for this game. Because after that first period, very sluggish. I think they were on their defensive and as I've said, it's certainly no surprise, you can't dominate every minute of every game. That's not reasonable. It's never going to happen. But at the same time, you can't be on the defensive for 30, 35 minutes virtually straight like the Predators were either. There have to be interruptions. There has to be pushback. And I don't think we saw enough of that of the Predators. We saw too much time in their own zone, and I think that exhausts the team when you're playing too much defense. You wind up just trying to clear the puck. You're not playing offense, and that cycle just repeated itself for too long a time before they finally woke up after PK Subban scored, you know, with probably about 6 or 7 minutes left.
Broadcasters mentioned this as a longstanding issue, a part of the power play that I hadn't thought of. Their inability to win faceoffs down there and stay in the zone instead of having to chase it down and reset and waste 30 seconds. And again, we saw that happen in this game. How much of a point of emphasis of all the things they're talking about has that been, and why can't they find somebody to win those faceoffs?
Yeah, it's unusual, and that's been a problem all year. They were one of the worst teams in the league at offensive zone faceoffs during the power play, which is unusual again because they were in the top half of the league in faceoffs overall, but for whatever reason, when it came to the power play, they weren't getting it done. Brian Boyle is generally a pretty good guy on offensive zone faceoffs, but he hasn't been getting it done either. And it's almost as if, as you say, you know, the first thing on their power play plan is retrieve puck, skate back up ice, then try and get it going after that. But yeah, it's a significant issue because they have had trouble getting set up. And when you have to go back and get the puck and waste 15, 20 seconds going back up ice, that's only going to mean you have to set up again, try to set up again, and that's been a challenge for the Preds.
Simmons has been a good power play guy historically, and he was supposed to be a guy that injected some life into this power play. Why hasn't?
Yes, he has not gotten the job done on that front, you know, and you could make a case really that Brian Boyle was brought in to help the power play too in that regard. And although Brian Boyle has 5 goals, you know, since the trade, I think only one of them has been on the power play. So both those guys were supposed to come in, make a net front presence on the power play and give it a boost. But the deflections have not been there. I won't say I haven't noticed these guys around the net. You know, I think they've been involved in, you know, creating more traffic. But bottom line, the numbers aren't there. They aren't getting the rebounds. They aren't getting the deflections. And in a different way, you can say also another of the trade acquisitions, Mikael Granlund, who was also brought in part to help that power play, not like a big physical stand in front of the net guy like Simmons and Boyle, but as more of a playmaker. And his numbers on the power play have been poor too. You know, unfortunately, it's as if, you know, anybody that puts on a Predators jersey, no matter who you've played for before, it's all of a sudden you're like, okay, you're not going to be too good on the power play now, but, you know, otherwise you can do okay.
Well, at some point, it has to be better than what we're hearing. Oh, we generated chances, because this team seems defeated as soon as they're a man up on the ice. And we've been hearing, oh, you know, we're moving the puck around. We're generating chances. Great. How about score one?
Yeah. That's the thing, you know, and you look at the power play just in this last game, 4 shots on goal on 4 power plays totaling 7 minutes and 25 seconds. That's just not going to get it done. You know, and this is, I'm not the first to raise this point, but I think, you know, part of the issue too is too much of a reliance on the shots from the point, you know, which have been good at times in years past. I think teams are more prepared for that now in general, and teams are getting more bodies in the way. At some point, that the Predators are going to have to transition, and they're going to have to find a way to make more seam passes, to get more opportunities in the slot, to get the defense moving around a little bit more. Those are things we just don't see happening on the power play for the Preds. Hasn't happened all year, and you see in game one what a difference a power play can make. Predators go 0-for-4, Stars get a power play goal, Stars win by 1 goal. There's your margin of difference right there.
John Glennon in studio with us. John, get your take on this, because it's a matchup I'm eager to see how Laviolette chooses to transition to in game two. And Dallas's top line had their way with the Predators in game one, and it looked like Laviolette felt like Sissons, Bonino, and Watson was the best way to shut down Dallas's top line, and they were owned by the top line in that game. So what's the different plan tomorrow night? Or is it too early to press a reset button on the plan going into the series with that trio?
Yeah, reasonable question. You know, I think there was a lot of hope for the Sissons, Benito, Watson trio based on what they did last year against Colorado's top line in the playoffs. Unfortunately, if you also look at Winnipeg last year, that line was not particularly good. The Jets got the better of that line in the second round as well. That group did play well here down the last few games after Austin Watson came back in. And again, that was another reason for hope here. I might think that they would give them another shot, another attempt at that first line. If that doesn't work, I think you have to go head-to-head your first line versus the top line for Dallas. See how that works. You know, again, you've got the last change here at home. You've got the matchup situation that you want.
So you change it along the way if it's not working.
Yeah. You can adjust and adapt if need be. But I might be more inclined to give it another try. I like the way those guys played in the last three or four games of the season. I do, you know, like the trio in general. So maybe give them another shot.
So traffic in front of the net, obviously big for Dallas on two of those goals. I don't see much of that from the Preds in that game. Why couldn't they get people out of there? Why couldn't you get people there themselves?
Well, I think it's kind of a related problem on both ends, and that was the fact that the Stars had such a high degree of puck possession there for about 30 or 35 minutes. When you've got puck possession in the defensive zone, when you have time spent down there, the more time you spend down there, the more bodies you can filter into the zone, the more players can slowly work their way towards the net. And that's what we saw on two of the Dallas goals. Radulov tipped in the one, and of course Zuccarello had the rebound in another. Both of those came after sustained pressure where again you can build up layers in front of the goal. On the other hand, with the Predators were spending so little time during that stretch in the offensive zone that, you know, their offensive possessions too often were the one and done kind. You weren't getting a lot of time cycling. You weren't getting players to build into the zone. You weren't able to get traffic in front of Ben Bishop, which is of course essential. And so I think in both regards, the Preds have to do a better job. I think, you know, in that first period, they showed certainly, that they've got the capability of being at least as good, if not a better team than the Dallas Stars. I don't think it's out of the question. After PK Subban scored, they got another jolt of life, and I think we saw a lot of scoring chances for them in the last few minutes. But, you know, more than anything to me, it was almost a mental thing. You know, it was a bit of a letdown after that first period, and unfortunately, once they let down a little bit, the Stars took full advantage of that, just swarmed them, and the Predators just could not break out often enough. We're too often on the defensive, and that's just exhausting.
Also going to need to get some zone time to get Bishop moving side to side, which is a way to beat a big guy like that, right?
Yeah, and, you know, that's a challenge for the Preds, is that the Stars in general are one of the best defensive players, or defensive teams in the league, and a big reason for that is Ben Bishop. You know, guy's 6'7", covers a lot of net, and, you know, he was hurt for some of the year, but came back strong at the end of the year, and, you know, in his last, I think his last 15 regular season games, Bishop had 6 shutouts, which is kind of a crazy stat. So it's going to be a challenge to beat him. But yeah, that's in general, that's one of the top ways to go after a bigger goaltender, is to get him moving from side to side. You see that against Pekka-Rinne too, where a smaller guy like a UC Saros is better lateral than Pekka-Rinne is. But it's a challenge. This is a very, very good Dallas defensive team overall. Second goals against during the regular season, 2.44. They have a really good penalty kill too. So this is not going to be a series, say, like a little bit like Colorado last year when the Preds were able to run up some goals. This is going to be tight, like we saw the other night.
And I think Dallas would be a tough matchup for anyone in the playoffs. But I think it's fair to say a Dallas win in the first round here is a Predators failure. And it is a failure because a first round loss forces this team internally to not just ask the tough questions, but answer the tough questions.
Agreed. You know, this is a team that won the President's Trophy last year, and granted, a lot of injuries this year, a lot of chemistry issues because of that, but bottom line is team did not live up to expectations during the regular season. And certainly, you know, when David Poile was signing a lot of these core players to long-term contracts and creating a window to win the Stanley Cup, this is prime time. This is in the middle of that window, and they've got a lot of guys playing in their prime. And then they made three, you know, what you would think, three solid additions at the trade deadline. So if they were to falter, you know, in the first round, or, you know, you could certainly make an argument even in the second. It's you know, it's a disappointment.
Yeah, and with that, and I think everyone internally knows all that. I'm not saying anything no one has thought about. But I also, I have to ask, and I wonder privately, are they approaching it like, oh, it's one game, it's one loss, we're not going unbeaten in the playoffs, no big deal? Or is the pressure to the point that we were just describing, oh, crap, we picked up right where we left off last year and we tried to run it back?
I think there's actually a little less pressure on this team than, say, last year. I thought last year when they went into the playoffs, there had been such an emphasis placed on getting home ice through the playoffs, winning the President's Trophy. We've got to have home ice. You know, it was almost as if they'd won a bit of a championship, you know, after getting the best record during the regular season, and they carried that number one seed into the playoffs, everybody gunning for them. I thought there was a little bit more pressure. To me, I thought this year, you know, lower points, you know, they struggled for a good portion of the year.
Having proven that home ice is meaningless
in the
playoffs.
Right, exactly. I thought there was a little bit less pressure this year. But you wonder also, you know, that the dreaded stat for the Predators in the playoffs, you know, rears its head from time to time. They've never won a series in which they've lost the first game 0-9 to this point. Now, most of these players certainly weren't around, you know, 10 years ago or whenever this streak was going on. So how much of a difference does that make? But yeah, there certainly has to be a little bit of doubt, because the Predators finished the season pretty well, 8-2-1 down the stretch. You know, I think you could make an argument they were playing as well as they had since the very first couple weeks of the season.
It's amazing what one game will do.
It really does, especially when you have 2 days before the next game,
two off days,
as opposed to one. You know, that gives you more time to replay the game.
You know, I think you have to approach it like it's one game, because the way you finish the season. But I also thought we would see a turning point opportunity for that team in game one, and then that 30-minute lull happened.
That's what I mean. I expected some more pushback at some point. You can't be dominant for 60 minutes. Absolutely not. You know, teams are too good for that kind of thing. But you can't be on the defense. It's just too exhausting to be on the defensive for that long, and you just limit your offensive chances because you're simply trying to clear the puck, get off the ice, get your next group in. And, you know, the way to reset that sometimes is through a power play. You know, maybe if you come through with a power play goal, that gives you a little momentum. You know, you get your cycle started again after the power play. But as we know, power play goals have been very infrequent. So
a power play goal, Reed and Chad were talking about the atmosphere in the Stone on Wednesday. A power play goal will take that up to 11 in that building.
Because, well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because the problem right now is, you know, not only is the power play not working, but it's hurting the team's momentum. You know, they play better 5-on-5 than it is true, you know, than they do in the power play. And, you know, you got
they had two shorthanded chances that could have turned into
something. Right, you know, and you got the crowd is all jacked up, and then you get the power play and they can't get it set up, and the puck's going back, and the crowd is just, you know, sags. And, you know, then you have to go back to work again to get that momentum and get the crowd, and the power play is effectively working against you during that stretch.
Oh, so. Penalty. Terrible.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's you joke about it, but it really is almost to the extent of the NFL where you can say, nope, we're going to decline that one. You know, we don't need it.
Oh, thank you.
We're better off without it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a strange situation.
Quick, come in a penalty to offset that.
Yes, let's get it going again. Right. Glenn Glenno, going again with us here in the postseason, John Glennon.
Promote the book, Johnny.
Book. Let's not forget the book. Everyone got to catch up on all things Predators here. So my book is on sale online or in local bookstores. 100 things Predators fans should know and do before they die. I think both new fans and old will enjoy it. So give it a read. And I say this is as good a time as any when the Preds are making another playoff run.
David Reed giving the thumbs up.
I don't know why you're predicting the
stamp of approval on this book from John Glennon.
The death of all these Predators.
Some people have asked me if I do read this, will I die? But you know, I can assure them that's not the case.
So far.
Just do 99 of the 100 things.
Yeah, right. Maybe take one off.
Thank you so much, John.
Okay, thanks, guys.